forget the program and just keep listening and dancing. That would be a great with Mazuzu, meaning young woman. This is from his album Rhythm of Healing. Weston Cozzi's compositions and styles of music were the driving force behind the distinctive sounds of Ladysmith, Black Mambazo, Mahalatini, and the Mahotella Queens, and scores of other South African groups produced or helped them produce thousands of recordings. He was paralyzed in an auto accident in August of 1998. He died 2 months later of his injuries. He was 58 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And let's first explain my absence yesterday. I wasn't really absent. It's just that we couldn't get anything done due to technical difficulties. And the guys are really working hard at trying to solve them. It's really more located here in Florida. And I'm getting some voicing in the background. I think that's Gary talking in the background. Don't make me come up there. Okay. So, yes, there is veritable jungle of crisscrossing wires and lines and whatnot, and I'm caught in the middle of it all. I'm not the only one. So the engineers back in New York are trying to untangle the entanglement and to see how best to get clean sound. That's very, very important. All this for you, just for you. So yesterday was an insurmountable day. We couldn't even get started because calls were crisscrossing each other and cutting each other off, and it was just horrific. So I said, why don't we just step back a little bit and see what the problem is? And I think they got a handle on what's going on. There's so many carriers, and they have so many different things that they work with, and sometimes their technology interferes with other people's technology. So it gets to be a little bit problematic. I am surrounded by telephone towers, and I should have the very best sound, but it doesn't work that way. So our engineers are working very hard to solve this problem, and we're getting somewhere, and hopefully by week's end, we should be in good shape and ready to resume our usual speed on Monday. So I thank you. I know it was a bit surprising, but these things happen, and they're a tough group. So it's not the end of the world. It's just annoying more than anything else. So they're working on that. All right. It is Free Your Mind Friday. Let me explain what that is for those of you tuning in perhaps for the first time. We dispense our regular program format and open up the program to become a like a forum, an open forum, where you can talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, providing you're making sense and that you're using your time well to illustrate or to discuss a major problem about which you have some concerns. So it is not just yammering and getting on. And in fact, I'm going to get a little bit rough on this. If you're veering off and thinking this is time for chit-chat, it's not. You I'll have to end your conversation and move on to conversations from people who have an issue to present, and they also might have a solution to whatever issue they're talking about. So that's what Free Your Mind Friday is about. It's very personal to you. You get to select your topic. You get to make your points. And hopefully you get to learn as well. You become more and more comfortable with the idea of being on air and being purposeful in your presentations, not talking for talking's sake. You have a point to make, and hopefully you will make it. The number to call is 888-874-4888. Be aware that you will be live when you go on air, so you want to watch your mouth a bit sometimes. We've never had problems with it, but it is important to just remind folks that you're on air and you're being listened to, so you want to be especially correct in your form. 888-874-4888. We start off with Harvey. You're on the air, Harvey.
Hello, wonderful you trees.
I'm not hearing you at all, practically.
Hello? Hello, wonderful you trees.
Oh, there you are. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And once again, may good health and happiness surround both you and your vast listening audience. And today, in the past, I've suggested that urban, suburban, and rural community gardens are an inexpensive way to have access to fresh, high-quality, great-tasting organic fruits and vegetables. But now I keep hearing that there might be food shortages across America and around the world. And in an October 20th, 2021, Washington Post article titled "Inaction on Climate Change Imperils Millions of Lives," the article states that climate destabilization could trigger food shortages around the world. So it's time for communities, especially economically depressed areas, to take responsibility for their nutritional well-being. And the good news is that we now have access to all the information that we will ever need to turn our neighborhoods into wonderful organic gardens. Think of your computer or cell phone as a cornucopia of knowledge on every aspect of how to build and grow healthy organic fruits and vegetables. I'm talking about roof gardens, front and backyard gardens, vacant lot gardens, balcony gardens, windowsill gardens, vertical wall and fence gardens, school and senior center gardens, as well as local greenhouses and indoor gardens. Community food creation can involve everyone from the kids to senior citizens. It'll be an education and healthy living involving every aspect of food production and preparation, as well as learning the art of preserving and pickling fruits and vegetables for later consumption. Communities working with their local elected officials can help to turn the threat of food scarcity into food abundance, and now is the perfect time to start planning and building a great nutritional future for us, our children, and during this worldwide reset. Saving money, building community solidarity, raising consciousness about cooking and eating good quality locally grown fruits and vegetables will lead to a better, more prosperous future for us all. And I want to thank you, Trees, for letting me say that.
Oh, thank you for contributing. One of the things that I like about what you're saying, and most times when you call in, you just don't identify a problem, you identify a solution. And that helps a great deal. I hope people pick you up on what you have offered today. You're listening to Lead Stories. I'm Nutrice Lead. As I explained at the top of the program, we're having a little glitch here, mostly located in Florida, where I am. But our good engineers have tackled the problem. They started getting into it deeply yesterday, and we're working on a solution. It's not our fault at all. It is just what happens when an area is just overpopulated with telephone companies and their various apparatuses. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Henry, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me, Utrice?
Yes, I can.
All right. I think I must be special because the last time I called Free Your Mind Friday, we were having technical difficulties. So I think that's me.
You're special in the way people say special to mean trouble.
Well, I'm imagining the powers that be. Oh, here comes that Henry again. Let's cut him off.
Yes, cut him off. But we think we're getting somewhere with this and fixing it.
Well, at least hopefully
the other companies are fixing it.
Okay. Well, Utrice, I'm glad you're okay. We missed you the last couple of days. So,
yes.
Hopefully,
just one day.
Oh yeah, one day. I'm sorry. Hopefully, you, the audience, have a great, productive, and safe weekend.
Thank you.
You know, and I wanted to commentate on Harvey, and I'm hoping people heard what Harvey said, because what Harvey said was very, very revolutionary. When you're talking about growing your own food, self-sustaining yourself, that's revolution. Now, I know Harvey's not a rah-rah person and, you know, go to the streets type of thing, but when you're talking about something like that and putting that into action, that's a real revolution right there. So I hope people heard what Harvey said. But what I wanted to do was go a little local to Chicago. Well, this is kind of like local to Chicago, but it should be on national news because Biden is appointing our former mayor, Rahm Emanuel, to the ambassadorship to Japan. And 2 days ago, there was a hearing to confirm him as the ambassador. Now, this is getting a lot of, you know, talk or, you know, in Chicago in regards to Rahm Emanuel as, you know, as him being the mayor. And as you and other people know about his mayorship, he's closed 50 schools, the Laquan McDonald incident, and various other things that I don't have time to talk about right now, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And so there's been a big buzz about, you know, talking against Rahm, which, yes, I don't think he should be a dog catcher right now. But what is interesting is there was a letter that because one of the things that came up in the hearings the other day was the whole handling of the Laquan McDonald shooting. Now, for those who don't know, that was the 2014 shooting of a young black man named Laquan McDonald by a Chicago police officer, Jason Van Dyke, who basically unloaded 16 rounds into him. He has been convicted of second-degree murder, which many people think he might be getting off in the next year or so. But, you know, that's another story as well. But what came out of it was there was a letter that was sent on behalf of Pastor Marvin, I can't think of his name. I think his name is Marvin, Marvin Hunter, Reverend Marvin Hunter, who is a pastor of a church here on the west side of Chicago. He is also the great uncle of Laquan McDonald. And he basically, in the beginning, was, you know, speaking out against Rahm and his whole handling of this whole video and how it was released the year after and after the election, where Rahm got 2 terms as the Chicago mayor. Now, what came out was he sent a letter to the committee in regards to supporting Rahm as the ambassador to Japan. Now, it's causing a big uproar here because of the fact that a lot of black Chicago, yeah, we don't like Rahm Emanuel, but hey, you know what? He did what he did. And so this pastor is, you know, giving, you know, basically saying he forgives Rahm for his handling of it, and he endorses his, you know, his I guess his being trying to be the ambassador of Japan. Now, last 2 days, local terrestrial and podcast radio here in Chicago has been on this guy and how, you know, they felt that he has betrayed Chicago in regards to trying to, you know, endorse Rahm in this. But what I find interesting, and this is something that I did not hear on, you know, on the media here in Chicago, is that not only did Pastor Hunter support Rahm, but the black alderman also did that as well. And I did not hear any outrage from against these black aldermen who also supported Rahm in this position. Now, it's easy to attack one guy, but then again, when you're talking about the black aldermen, and there's a number of them here in the city, it's like nobody wants to attack them. Come to find out that these, you know, so-called black media outlets and radio stations, they're the ones that are supporting these aldermen. So I find it very interesting that everybody could say something against Reverend Hunter. And yes, what I thought he did was wrong as well, but nobody says anything about the black alderman. And so, you know, what I said 6 years ago when Rahm was elected and majority of the black aldermen didn't want to support Rahm because they didn't want the guy he was running against, Chuy Garcia, to be, you know, mayor of Chicago because they thought that he was going to turn Chicago into a Mexican city. I said, you get what you deserve. And that's exactly what they got. They got what they deserve. So for me, you know, Rahm is going to do what he's going to do because we failed to stop him 6 years ago.
Okay. So why are you angry?
Well, I mean, because of the fact that I just feel like this anger right now is unwarranted and it's too late. And it's, like I said, it's easy to attack one guy for a letter, you know, in support of this guy. So I'm asking the people who are outraged about this too. Why are you guys angry?
Yes, but being outraged is not enough. I mean, people should know this by now. If you don't have the political will to back up what we are talking about as outrage, then you make yourself irrelevant. You cannot overcome objections. Rahm Emanuel has not been the friend of the black community in Chicago or any place else. But he seems to land on his feet every time. And after landing on his feet, he is protected from harm. Harm being constant criticism. People know that it's not going to amount to anything. You could talk until you turn green, but he is safe. But he's safe because the Democratic machine will make him safe.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that is.
And I agree with you. I just feel like, you know, just like when you ask me, you know, why are we outraged? I'm asking everybody else that. Why are we outraged about this? And why are we focused on this anyway? Rahm has, like you said, Rahm is already protected because we failed as Chicagoans to stop him 6 years ago. So what he does now, that's our fault.
And he is protected from the highest office, from the White House down to the local level. He has protections all the way. Nobody is saying, okay, your time is up. We want you out of here. And we have much better people who we can look to for leadership. We don't like what you're doing, and we think you are a harm. You do harm to our community. But well, until people really get serious about their interests, this is what will happen.
Well, you know, it's crazy over here. Like I said, we're focusing our energy on something that is done and past. Now,
yes,
Lori Lightfoot has got, I think she's up for re-election next year. And so now we've got a situation now where we might be having another mayor, a new mayor coming in, because Lori has, you know, Lori has not only just upset black folks here, but various other groups here in Chicago. So we don't think she's going to survive. So now the question is, who's going to be the new mayor? And unfortunately, there is one candidate that people have been saying, and it is just really, really, it is just really, really concerning me as a Chicagoan. And that guy is Arnie Duncan. Can you imagine him being mayor of Chicago?
Okay. But you see, we see the problem. What we don't see is action about the problem. And you don't have an alternative political system. You can be mad all you want. They are absolutely convinced black folks are not going to leave the Democratic Party. They love it too much. They're not going to take on a Democratic candidate. They're not going to kick out a Democratic candidate. Chicago is the bedrock of the Democratic Party. So people are not serious. And they will continue to suffer these insults as long as they continue to demonstrate you can do it and get away with it. You could be the most offensive person in the world, the most undesirable candidate in the world. If you have the blessing and support of the Democratic Party, you're all right. You're safe. So,
well, Yatrice,
I'm feeling this to our attention, but
all right,
we got to move beyond this. I'm sorry?
No, one last thing is, like, I'm thinking that this is not unique to Chicago as far as cities with Democratic strongholds. So,
no, it's how the parties work. A Republican stronghold works exactly the same way. When we don't have progressive strongholds, we don't have alternative independent strongholds. No, we're still married to that two-party system. And we always end up getting screwed. So people have to rethink their politics and organize accordingly. Thanks so much for your call today. Have a good week, too. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I hope all is well. And I just want to share with Henry. Henry,
you.
I feel your pain. Because it's not isolated to Chicago, because in New York, in the next 2 weeks, we're going to be getting a similar individual as the new mayor of New York City, a young man by the name of Eric Adams, who Yatrice knows only too well, who is not the... Yeah, Eric Adams is currently the Brooklyn borough president. He was before that a senator of New York, and before that, he was an NYPD officer. He retired from the NYPD. But what we know of Eric Adams from the 80s, when he was a lieutenant and he organized a group called 100 Blacks and Law Enforcement Who Cared, and he was the definition of an activist. But the person we see today, I don't recognize that person. And so when you look at the Democratic machinery, they are just as skilled as the Republican in choosing and supporting and promoting individuals who will not challenge the system. So, honey, it's not isolated to Chicago. It is wherever the Democratic Party is, it is the system that is entrenched, and it is, it's like a virus. It intends to survive. However it has to survive, it intends to survive, and it will. But that's not really why I called. I called because, yes, I was not able to get on yesterday. You asked a question about if we could set policy, what would we do? And I can tell you what I would do. The first thing I would do is mandate universal pre-K starting at age 3. Right now, nationally, children enter kindergarten at age 5. In New York, we have it at age 4. But I would initiate universal, national pre-K at age 3. Why do I do that? We know that by the time a child enters kindergarten, if you look at a white child and you look at a black and brown child, there is a language deficit that cannot be made up by kindergarten. Children who start pre-K at age 3, their brain cells are like sponges, and they will acquire everything that you put in front of them. The goal is to stimulate an interest in education, stimulate an interest in language, and stimulate an interest in reading. And actually, I have never seen a high school graduate or a college graduate who was a gang member. So when you talk about a gang prevention strategy, universal pre-K is the best policy. That's number one. Number two, the mothers of those children, however, should not see universal pre-K as a means to get the kids out of the house sooner. I would mandate that every woman or man who is receiving benefits, that they would be mandated to participate in the classroom education as a teacher's assistant, not to have any education responsibilities at all, but to be there to be an extra pair of hands for the teacher. In that way, number one, they are demonstrating that their presence, they may not want to be involved in their child's education, but their presence over time hopefully will motivate them to participate in their child's education rather than just sending them out the door and going to school. The next thing I would do is develop a universal work program for everyone. The logo should be a job for everyone who wants a job. Now, how would I pay for this? Because, of course, everybody wants to know how I would pay for this. So the first thing I would do is take the money from the $770 billion defense budget that we currently spend. We don't have any wars. We're not involved in any wars. We don't need that money in the defense budget. Take $770 billion from the defense budget and put it in universal pre-K. I would then take the $4 billion that we give to Israel every year and take back the extra billion that we gave them this year towards a jobs program. Universal pre-K for 3 and a universal jobs program. And it would be funded by the money that you take back from the defense budget, the money you take from Israel, and if we need more money, then make certain that we do a tax on billionaires. There's plenty of money there. They just don't want to invest it in black and brown people.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for your contribution.
Thank
Gwen
you.
From New York, you're on the air. Gwen, are you there? Okay. Marcus from Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Utrice. Interesting discussion, as always. I'd like to just riff a little bit about the fact that we have to abandon this exclusive view that the only thing in our universe is this rotten political system, that's all we can do. I mean, it's pretty clear that resistance is obviously the only option look, I mean, the traditional meaning of Democrat and Republican in American politics has been Democrats believed in the carrot and the stick, and the Republicans only believed in the stick. But now the Democrats are abandoning the carrot, too. You see, both sides are only concerned with using the stick. So we're faced with, is it better to lay down and get beaten or to die or stand up and resist? So I think we have to see beyond the status quo and we were carefully trained to see only that. What the media and the political system and your educational system has given you. So when we see the system's violence against us, that's all we see, but not the fear the system has, that which is why they resort to the violence. They're afraid. When we see the militarization of daily life on an hourly basis, we just see the weapons, but not the fact that there's no mass base behind it. People hate it. We listen to the hatred in the press, and that's all we hear, not the fact that the people the media are aiming at hate them. The polls show this. The approval rating for media is less than 6%, about the same for Congress. You know, we see the police with semi-automatic pistols, and that's all we see, not the fact that there's no mass support for this encroaching, rising tide of fascism. We just see the terror committed against people, the poor, and that's all we see. Not the fact that it's potentially a socially very, very explosive situation. We see people's political apathy, and we stop there. Not the fact that people hate the system that has nothing at all to offer them. You know, we see high levels of suicide among teens, and we just see the desperation, not the fact that they hate the society that has been constructed for them. You know, people are not interested in the economic struggle, but it's not because they're not politically interested. It's because they refuse to struggle for another measly wage and the right to continue life as idiotic consumers. I mean, this is what we have to realize, that these are things, regardless of party or politics or religion, that almost everyone share. And if we can organize on the basis of these things, now you've got a real resistance. Now resistance means something. You know, now I don't say it's going to be easy to do this, but we have to understand this situation is not going to change by itself. If we don't do it, it's over. They'll just roll over you. So this is where I would like people to start at least thinking about focusing their political mentality into the future. The traditional system has no solutions for you. That's clear. That's absolutely clear. They have nothing. All you can do is just, you know, the discussion about Rahm Emanuel was interesting. The Democratic machine can only produce Rahm Emanuels. It can't produce anything else. It's like asking a car assembly line to produce something other than cars. That's not what it's set up to do. It's going to produce obedient technocrats who will do what power wants. That's both parties. That's all the parties that have existed in the last 200 years in this country. If you want something that will serve the needs of actual people, the people themselves have to form it. That's my only point today. And I'd like to leave that with you and your listeners.
It might be your only point, but it is one incredibly heavy point. And thank you for offering it for our consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gwen, you're back. You're on the air.
Sorry, technical difficulty. Got caught up in the rabbit ears. Okay. So I wanted to, first of all, everybody has made such great points. I would love to piggyback on all of them, but I can't. Because I called up with one intention. But first, I wanted to thank you, Utrice. I ran for station to be on the board of WBAI, and after I did that, I was blocked from calling them. Every time I would call, it would simply not ring, and that would hang up, and this has been going on since that time. And I guess I mentioned that a couple times on your show, and guess what? Last week, I finally was able to get through. So, miracle of miracles. So... I had to say that, unfortunately, I think BAI is one of the most censored programs, and I feel bad about that because, as you know, if you remember, I've been calling for a very long time, including when you were on WBAI. So that's very sad. I go down that place, but they too have become like an advertisement for taking the vaccine. But why I'm calling you, Patricia talked about little kids, and I'm going to talk about the seniors. It's something that I'm having an experience with now myself. I'm not a senior. My parents are. But one of the things that people get really trapped in as their parents get older is, you know, taking care of your parents. And I have been taking care of my parents, and then circumstances changed, and my sister brought in a caretaking agency, and the cost is unbelievable. It's left my parents bankrupt. It costs $10,000 a month, so they don't have any money left. And in this small town, I found it very unusual. My parents live in a really... Sorry, say it again?
A little bit. You're breaking up.
Sorry. Oh, can you hear me now? Because I'm not moving.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so... when I was calling around asking about caretaking, I noticed that everybody in this small, very white town was telling me that everybody that does this live-in caretaking is from West Africa. Now, that is where my parents' caretaker is from, but she doesn't get that $10,000 a month. She probably doesn't get hardly anything. And when a friend of mine suggested maybe I should ask her if she would work just for us instead of this agency. But I was told by somebody else that if she deviates from this agency, they'll just send her back to West Africa. And I don't know if that's true or real law, but I just thought it was strange that only one location was West Africa, having all these people come in from that far away to a tiny little town in New Jersey. How would they even know about it? Which to me sounds like they didn't come on their own. Now, the agency that takes care of my parents, he was the head of Jeff Van Drew's Congress for 18 years. So he has ties with the VA and a lot of political ties. But I still have to, I have to question where this supply of people is coming from. And I would almost equate it to some kind of trafficking because it seems like the people that are being brought over don't have any choice. Because I hear that if you don't like where you're staying and you want to quit, then they make up some kind of excuse for you to be deported. So that's it. And I wondered if anybody else knew anything about this, this particular population, because even though where my parents live, there are immigrants that live there, but most of the immigrants that live there are from Mexico, and West Africa is pretty far away. And if I probably lived in West Africa, I wouldn't know where to, you know, this little town in the United States, how would you know to go there? And I just found it very weird that this guy who's so politically connected has got this group of women that he basically is running roughshod over. They don't really seem to have any choice. They're not getting paid anything, and they're being forced to kind of stay where they are, because if they want to leave, then the agency, you know, sends them back, deports them. So I don't know whether anybody else is going through anything like that, but I just wanted to put that out there and see if anybody could, you know, come up with anything. Last thing I wanted to say was Jeremiah was on WBAI today. And I'm so glad he made the point about, I got a video in my, a friend of mine sent me a video about the vaccine. and Jeremiah spoke about it on Gary Knoll. And I sent this to Gary Knoll because it was a weird vaccine. It had it was clear in the container, but when the doctor put it under the microscope in a white light, it started to change colors. And she said it's very strange because if you were mixing something together, it might change colors. But for something to just sit on a screen that hasn't been touched and start changing these fluorescent colors, and then there was this little thing in there that looked kind of like an octopus. And it was very, very strange. It was some kind of organism. And I sent it to Gary, I guess, last week and asked if they would take a look at it because I couldn't make heads or tails of whether it was authentic or whether it was some kind of, you know, hoax. But if it is authentic, it's pretty scary. So if Jeremiah is coming back, I hope he'll talk about that a little bit in his interaction with Gary Knoll before, because I think these, you know, vaccines are very scary. And last thing I want to say is that, yes, we don't have any good choices at all this year, as usual in New York. As a matter of fact, people are standing down from running for office anymore because they know that unless you're in this particular corrupt machine, you just can't get in. So in my district where people, normally five people run, nobody's opposing this woman who is totally as interesting as a washcloth, as lackluster as a dull stainless steel, and nobody even is going to take the time to run against her because she's been put there by the machine. And I think people that have a lot of energy and try to get involved in politics realize how much work it is, and then just always end up losing because you always have to go up against the tricks of the Democratic machine. It's gotten too hard, and that's really a shame. So I've never voted for a Republican in my life. However, this year, because Eric Adams is so staunch on making the noose of mandates even tighter, I will not be voting for him. I will vote for Curtis because his name is Curtis Sliwa, and as whatever his past is, I don't care, because my only issue right now for me is that I don't want anyone to make me take something that I don't want to take. And I take the vaccine issue very seriously, and I don't think any government has the right to force you to do that.
I say in Brooklyn, you're picking your Persian.
Well, I don't know, but all I know is that I couldn't vote for that guy. And the last thing that people don't know about Eric Adams, or maybe they do, but I find it really despicable. I'm helping some people in Flatbush save an African-American burial ground. And Eric Adams has been trying to develop it for the last year. I mean, I can't believe the guy gets on TV and says, I am your black candidate, and he's going to stand on that soapbox. But there's a very important African-American burial ground. This is very interesting because it is these are the slaves that worked for the Vanderbilts and the very wealthy families in Brooklyn. And as a matter of fact, this land was owned by the Dutch Reformed Church, and it was donated to be a cemetery. And then they went ahead and they built Erasmus High next to it. So part of the burial ground is actually underneath there. And there was another seminary that was on it, and for some reason the seminary was demolished. Well, anyway, if you can believe it, everybody's fighting this you know, black mayor, here he wants to be, about saving this little piece of land. It's not a big piece of land, but it should be saved because of the souls that are underneath of there, and to show some respect for the people and the things that they went through. So I don't see this guy as being very genuine, no matter what he did in the past. It's irrelevant. I met him in the past too, when he was an activist, but I am so not inspired by him. And, you know, I don't care what he says. He just sounds like a blah, blah, blah commercial of more junk that I hear from every other candidate. You know, they
have to leave it there because I could take only one more call before we say goodbye.
Thank you, Dries.
Thank you, Gwen, for calling in. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. This week you motivated me to think about the things I'd want to change. And as I think about it, we are living in a state that has a flawed foundation. The Constitution was written by the elite, many of them slave owners, and we are suffering today from what happened with that Constitution. For me, the thing that is most important, if we get to that point, is to change the system so the Constitution works for the masses of people. Right now, for example, Congress is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the ruling class and their minions. And the only way that we're going to get all the good changes we need is to put some power in the hands of the people. And for that, I'm going to recommend as the base or the foundation for this state and its governance to have a national referral system for all the population to vote for things that are important to all of us, because those people who are sitting in the Senate and the House of Representatives, most of them do not work for us. So all the things that I was thinking about when you brought that question up about, you know, the military and all the other I have a long list of things I could talk about, but we need a system like somewhat exists in places like Switzerland and whatnot, where people actually vote. And the people want a national health system. We don't have one because the Congress won't come around. But the people want it, but they're not getting it because those people that sit in Congress are not fundamentally representing the masses of people. We have all kinds of other situations. For example, the way the New Deal was destroyed, the people did not want that, but it was destroyed because those in power in the Congress, for example, and executive wanted it gone because they represent those at the top.
I hate to interrupt you, but we're out of time. And we'll find a way to make up to you, and we have Jackie also waiting in the wings, so that you have priority in presenting your views, so that you present a complete view, and you shouldn't be deprived.
Thank you.
Today, for today, we are done because we're out of time. Thank you so much for, you know, just toughing it out while we try to figure out what is the answer to the dilemma here, the technological dilemma. And we'll solve that soon because I have faith. We have really brilliant engineers, and they'll come up with an answer faster than we know. So maybe over the weekend we'll get some more information as to where we go and we continue. But thank you for your spirit. That's good. Your fighting spirit. It inspires me to keep going. Have yourselves a good weekend. Rest a little. And put yourselves in the company of people who lift you up. Okay? And then we'll see each other again on Monday. Bye-bye.